Chapter 41. The Norsemen. Behold, there stands a monastery. Many monks live together in that monastery. At the head of it stands an aged man with snow-white hair. Upon him rests the management. He is the abbot or prior. All the monks must subject themselves to his guidance. Ah, in those days the monasteries were still a blessing to the nation. Almost every monastery had a convent school where boys from the vicinity were instructed by the monks. Other lay brothers set out very early in the morning, while the dew was still upon the fields, to clear waste grounds and to make them fruitful fields. Others again visited the sick in the far surroundings. They cared for the sick and helped the afflicted. Never did anyone knock in vain at the gate of the monastery. Wanderers, beggars, travelers were admitted, received kindly, and cared for. Hundreds and perhaps thousands of those monasteries were built during the reign of Charlemagne. But now the tranquil stillness which usually prevails there is rudely disturbed. Savage yelling is heard before the locked gate of the monastery. A band of Norsemen demand entrance. But now the gates remain closed. The monks keep themselves anxiously hidden and tremblingly await the things which shall come. The chief lets his heavy axe fall roaringly upon the gate. The sharp iron cuts deep into the wood. Blow upon blow resounds. The blows reverberate with a dull sound through the arches, spreading terror and consternation among the occupants. The door cracks. Chips of wood fly all around. Finally, the heavy gate gives way under the powerful axe blows of the Norsemen. A triumphant yell ascends from among the gang of those that are crowded before the gate. Now that the entrance is free, they crowd inside, eager for booty, thirsty for blood. They scatter themselves with the weapons in their fists. They forcefully enter into the large hall of the monastery, where the lay brothers are tremblingly awaiting the end. The gray abbot stands in their midst. "Odin, Odin," sounds grave and threatening out of the mouths of the penetrating gang. Then follows a scene which cannot be described. Without mercy and without any pardon, all those lay brothers are cruelly murdered. Those brutes have no respect for the gray hairs of the abbot. They have no pity with the youthful monk, only a boy, who has sought protection with the aged abbot. Without exception, everyone, old and young, are struck down. The rough stone floor is being colored red with blood. Finally, there is no one more alive. The horrible massacre is finished. Then the murderers disperse throughout the building. They rob everything they can find, gold and silver ornaments and articles, other things of value. In short, everything is dragged out of the monastery which can be taken along. They find wine in the cellar. The monks used this for sick and feeble people. On their travels in the vicinity, they took a bottle of that wine along to refresh the exhausted wanderers therewith. Now it all falls a prey to the Norsemen. The robbers greedily drink that precious wine, and that makes them still wilder than they already are. When finally everything of any value has been hauled away, and the monastery has been completely plundered empty, then they set fire to it. Soon the flames blaze up high. Heavy clouds of smoke float away. The crackling of the burning wood sounds loudly. Then the plunderers continue their march. They grin. They have finished their destroying work. Odin, Odin, resounds their dreadful shout. They go onward again. Yonder lies a village or city. No, as yet there are no heavy walls with strong towers which can protect the inhabitants. There is not as yet a deep ditch which can check the intruders. The houses lie scattered, open and exposed. There is nothing which affords any protection. Behold, in flying gallop, the brutes are already drawing near. They strike down everything they meet. Poor, poor inhabitants, who shall help them? Ah, in mortal fear they still try to defend their city, their property, their wives and children. Desperation gives them strength. With contempt of death, they fall upon the robbers. However, it is of no avail. The superior power is too great. They are cut down by tens at a time, and finally, when the rest see that it is all in vain, they flee into the open country. The havoc is horrible which they cause in the city. Also there everything is robbed and taken along. Gold, silver, furniture, ornaments, coins, too much to mention. At times they also take the cattle along to serve as food. Sometimes they are dispatched out of sheer love to kill and cast upon a heap. Without distinction, men, women, children, and aged ones are struck down. Sick and afflicted ones fall beneath the blows of the roaring clubs. Soon the streets are strewn with dead bodies. Only the sturdiest and strongest young men and the good-looking young girls are massed together by them. Afterward, these shall be taken along to work as slaves for their hard, cruel masters, either in their homes or out in the field. And then, when that city or village has been finally and completely plundered of everything, then fire is likewise set to the houses. Those houses, which are mostly all of wood, burn very easily. Soon that place is also a sea of fire. And when finally calmness has returned, and those robbers and murderers who had respect for nothing have marched further, then the stillness of death prevails there. Over yonder lies the still smoking and smoldering heap of rubbish of the monastery where the charred bodies of the lay brothers are buried under the rubble. Here is the city still burning fiercely. When finally the night falls, the sky is colored dull red by the flames of the houses that are still burning. Where the day before hundreds, yea, thousands of people lived, where children romped and played in the streets, where industrious craftsmen were busy working to earn a livelihood for their family, it is now alarmingly quiet. Only the roar of collapsing buildings is heard. Only an odd person who had hidden himself in the field and who has now returned to see if anything of his possessions may be saved, wanders about disconsolately among the heaps of rubble of his former home, or seeks weepingly the maimed and half-charred bodies of his wife and children. All that is the work, the beastly work of those brutes who spare nothing. But, does that go just like that? Does Charlemagne, the mighty protector of Christianity, the great friend of diligent craftsmen, permit that? Are those murderers then not punished? Who are those Norsemen? Why do they do that? Perhaps all those questions arise in your mind. Well then, I shall try to give an answer to that. The Norsemen were born in the extreme north of Europe, in Denmark, Norway, and Sweden. Theirs properly their native country, but the soil in those countries was not so suitable for farming. Large, immense forests covered the ground for the most part. They could not find a livelihood in them. Neither did hunting and fishing yield sufficiently to supply the people with food. What then? Suffer poverty and want? Oh no, that is far from the mind of the Danes and Norsemen. Suffer want? While in the south so much gold and silver, so much food may be found? That is out of the question. Behold, the Norse ships, manned with heavily armed soldiers, leave the coast of Norway and Denmark. They sail southward. Abundance is there. Food, gold and silver, as much as they want, is there. Those pagan Saxons and Frisians, who would not submit to Charlemagne and who had fled to the north, had told them that. If then there is not enough food in their own country, well then, they shall go and get it elsewhere. Full of courage, they go on their way to unknown regions. In rough wooden ships, with a dragon head in the front, the crude mast, with the large sail in the center, and filled with armed men, they sail over the seas. Merrily those ships plow through the waves. The water foams up high at the bow, but wherever they come, they bring death and destruction, and wherever they go ashore, they leave behind a terrible trail of blood, fire, and smoke. They land upon the coasts of England, of the Netherlands, and of Belgium, of France, and of North Germany. Yea, they even ventured as far as the Mediterranean Sea. When they have set foot on shore, then they penetrate deeper into the country. The horses which they need and the wagons upon which they will load the spoil are stolen. Churches and monasteries, villages and cities are plundered and destroyed. The people are massacred. And then, suddenly, even as fast as they have come, they disappear. They quickly go on board and depart, before the armies can approach them, which must drive them away and put a stop to the rapacity. The wind bulges the sails, and their ships plow through the open sea, before they can be caught. And when there is no wind, so that the sails hang slack, what then? No fear. Many powerful muscular hands grasp the long oars, and seethingly the pirate ships nevertheless plow through the rolling waters of the sea. Charlemagne is no longer alive, because he died in the year 814. He rests in the grave at Aachen. They can no longer harm him. Charlemagne saw that coming, which is now taking place. For that reason, fear had filled his heart when he saw those pirate ships in the distance. Now his son, Louis the Pious, reigns. He received the surname of the Pious, but it would have been better for his country and for his people if his name had been Lewis the Brave, or Lewis the Norseman Killer, because Lewis the Pious was not a strong or powerful prince. He stood practically powerless over against those pirates, who had no scruples for anything. When he received the tidings that the Norsemen had invaded somewhere, then he called the main army together. We have already told you that every province furnished its own troops, and that all those small provincial armies constituted the main army. Isn't that so? Well, then, that army was then called together. But it always came too late. It always lasted much too long before the soldiers of Lewis the Pious came together, and that when finally everything was ready to march to the place where the Norsemen had made such great havoc, then they only found smoking heaps of rubble. Then they found the roads covered with corpses, but the enemy had disappeared long ago. They were again bobbing high and wide upon the waves. Thus it happened, time after time. The main army never came in time. It was always too late. Besides, Lewis the Pious had three sons, and while their father was still alive, each of them demanded a part of the country for themselves. Lewis the Pious granted that. He divided his enormous empire into three parts. Those brothers could not agree among themselves either. They were jealous of each other, and at the cost of the other, each one tried to enlarge his territory. Because of that, bloody civil wars originated, which weakened and exhausted the country more and more. The Norsemen took advantage of that. They returned time and again, first with a relatively small detachment, later with larger groups, and sometimes large armies invaded those woeful countries, one time even with an army of 100,000 at once. However, the object of those Norsemen was not only gold and silver, food and all sorts of booty. Oh no, besides that, they were filled with a burning hatred against Christianity. The pagan Frisians and Saxons who had fled during the reign of Charlemagne told them that the service of the gods had almost disappeared in those lands. They had told them that no longer Wodan, but the god of the cross of the Christians, was being worshipped. Now those Norsemen came with the object to restore the ancient worship of the gods in its full glory. The name of their main god was Odin. For that reason, they always caused their threatening battle cry of Odin, Odin, to resound. Especially the Church of God had to suffer. The Prince of Darkness used the pagan Norsemen as his instruments to exterminate Christianity. Christianity, which had been brought to those countries with so much trouble and at the cost of so much blood, must be swept away from out of those countries by means of the Norsemen. In this we also again see something of the terrible warfare between Christ and Satan. The work of God had to be destroyed. The number of monks and clergymen that were murdered during those expeditions was enormously great. God alone knows that number. Those destructive invasions continued undiminished. Where now the town of Wijk by Duurstede in the province of Utrecht is located, the thriving city of Duurstadt was situated at that time. During the space of 4 years, Duurstadt was ransacked 4 times and burned down. The struggle was terrible, which was carried on there. The number of victims which fell there has been awfully great. In later years, they have evacuated at that place and its surroundings, and then they found so many bones, human bones, that they were carried away by the truckloads. But it did not remain only with that city. The city of Utrecht was also taken, robbed of everything, burned down to the ground, and the greatest part of the population was murdered. The vicinity of Utrecht was sown with thorns and thistles by the Norsemen, so that that territory became a wilderness. The prosperous city of Stavoren, in the province of Friesland, was destroyed. The beautiful island of Walcheren in Zeeland was ravaged so badly that not a dog barked, nor a cock crew any more. In the year 857, the inhabitants of Egmond, near the sea, were massacred, and the large monastery was leveled with the ground. In the year 876, they appeared before Deventer, and soon that city was also a large sea of flames. In that same year, they also destroyed the entire region of Isol. Thus I could go on. Indescribable was the misery which was then suffered and the grief which was then struggled through. They even penetrated to the German city of Aachen. The Norsemen made a horse stable of the beautiful cathedral in which Charlemagne once listened to the preaching of God's word. The holy places were desecrated by them. Even the city of Cologne, still further up the Rhine, was sacked of everything. The scattered farmhouses also fell prey to the robbing and murdering gangs. The farmers with their servants were hung on the branches of the trees. The women and children were cruelly murdered. The stalls with cattle were robbed empty, and the harvest in the field was trampled upon and destroyed. All the prosperity and flourishing conditions which prevailed during the time of Charlemagne disappeared and made room for bitter poverty. The great security which prevailed during the time of Charlemagne changed into insecurity and uncertainty. The mighty empire of the Franks lay open, exposed, and defenseless before the plundering Norsemen. It was useless to offer resistance. If there had only been a strong navy, it would have never gotten that far. Then the navy would have swept the ships of the Norsemen away from the coast of those countries. Then the Norsemen would have never acted so boldly. But the Norsemen knew that they could do them little harm, and they took advantage of that. Alas, there was no navy. When the Norsemen were approaching, then the people fled in mortal fear. However, upon one occasion, the inhabitants of the coast combined together and unitedly, with the courage of desperation, they fought against those pirates, and, for once, the Norsemen were repulsed with heavy losses. Yea, the Norsemen did not return to such places. Alas, that happened so seldom. Usually everyone fled away in panic, and the Norsemen could do as they pleased. As I wrote before, Louis the Pious stood helpless over against those pirates. The Norsemen were too quick for him. When Louis the Pious perceived that he could not hold them back, he tried it in a different way. He thought, if I should give those Norsemen a piece of ground, then perhaps they shall stop that plundering, then perhaps they shall come and live here and settle down here. Then this will become their new country. Perhaps then their raids and robberies shall become less. Perhaps then we may yet become good friends with the Norsemen. In this way he gave Walcheren to a prince of the Norsemen. Another Norse prince, a certain Godfred, invaded Friesland with his army and remained there. However, by that time Louis the Pious was dead already. But his three sons, who always quarreled among themselves and were ever at war with each other, did not try to drive him out of it, but gave him that province as a loan. They made a sad mistake if they had hoped that by so doing the Norsemen would have become more friendly and humane. On the contrary, the Frisian people have suffered terribly under those brutes and barbarians. It is said of them that they compelled the Frisians to walk around with a halter around their neck. Besides, the doors of their houses had to be directed toward the south and be very low, so that when the Frisians wanted to enter their homes, then they would have to bend down very low. In that way they were forced to make a deep bow toward the north, where the country of their oppressors was located. What a humiliation for those Frisian people, who had always loved their liberty so much. That was more than they could endure. Those countries had to suffer dreadfully for 200 years from those pagan pirates. Those poor people, who saw no deliverance anywhere, finally directed their eyes upward. When in the evening they kneeled down at their bedside, they always added this lamentation to their prayer: O God, deliver us from the Norsemen. Who can tell how many prayers were sent up to heaven, to the Almighty, for deliverance and relief out of that great distress? And the Lord has answered those prayers. Finally, those invasions gradually became less, and the armies with which the Norsemen invaded became smaller. This was due to two causes. We know already that Charlemagne had divided his vast empire into many provinces. A count ruled in the name of the emperor over each province. He was answerable to Charlemagne. Hence, he was some sort of a governor. When the Norsemen had invaded their province, each time those counts, especially those that lived on the coast, had called in the help of Louis the Pious and afterward of his sons. But the emperor gave no assistance. The emperor could give no assistance. Because the assistance which Louis the Pious offered always came too late, and often not at all, finally the counts no longer sent any messages. It was in vain anyway. They could not wait for nor reckon on that. But do you know what they did? They began to care for the defense themselves. They formed an army themselves, which stood ready when the enemy came. The opposition which the Norsemen experienced through that became ever greater. Their losses became ever heavier. The last invasion took place in the year 1010, and then the Norsemen were repulsed with bloody heads. It is true, this was one of the causes why the invasions became less. By that embittered, ever-increasing opposition, the Norsemen became discouraged. Neither could they penetrate anywhere as deeply into the country. But there was still another cause. brave missionaries have risked to go to the land of those pagan Norsemen, and there they have brought God's word. I hope to tell you one thing and another about that in the next chapter. However, it shall have become clear to us that those invasions by the Norsemen, which lasted 200 years, have been terrible. Especially God's church has suffered terribly, but Christianity was not destroyed. On the contrary, the church of the Lord has emerged triumphantly out of this inhumane struggle, although it was heavily devastated and battered. Again, the heinous design of the devil to destroy God's church by means of the Norsemen was a complete failure. Again, the prince of darkness suffered defeat. But it shall also become clear to us of how great significance the reign of Charlemagne has been, because if that had not preceded these things, then, humanly speaking, Christianity could have never been able to endure this trial. How clear does God's reign appear in this?